Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is Daf Tzadik Dalit, and we're holding at the Halakha Mishnah on the bottom of it, Tzadik Gimel Amud Beis. And we have our dear Mikey here for probably the last day of this week that we're going to get to see him. He's going to be stuck in the army all week, without any breaks. So we wish him an easy time. Alrighty. Shaleach Adam Yarech Lovei Kochavim Shigid Ana Shebetocha. Mipnei Shemekomo. It's amazing how much information you can get packed into a sentence. So you're allowed to send a thigh, which does not mean a piece of meat. Apparently, it just means a thigh, an entire thigh. You could send this to a goy, even though you didn't take out the Gid HaNasheh, because after all, there's no way that a Jew is going to end up buying this from him or getting it from him and eating it, because it's very clear where the Gid HaNasheh is. So he'll know that the Gid HaNasheh was not removed. Now, obviously, this raises all kinds of crazy questions. I mean, how would a Jew be allowed to buy a piece of meat from a goy anyway? And just because you could tell on a whole thigh whether there's a Gid HaNasheh that's been removed, I mean, what if he cuts it into pieces and packages it in his grocery store? I mean, what the heck? And are you allowed in general to buy meat from a goy? And so on. So we're going to look into all of these questions and look at every aspect of what may be involved here. And surprisingly, it's really amazing. Things that you would never expect to be the issues end up being some of the important issues over here. So, first of all, let's make that diak. It says that a person could send a yorech, which means a yorech. It doesn't say he can send a piece of meat from the yorech. It means he's got to send a shlema. You got to send a whole thigh, not a cut-up thigh. Which, I mean, what difference would it make, since he can always cut it up anyway? So let's try to figure out what we're talking about, because are we in a location where it would be possible for Jews to buy in a non-kosher butcher shop? So b'mayaskinan. So we're assuming, obviously, I mean, the only way that we could possibly have a situation in which a Jew would be able to end up consuming any of this would be that we have a single butcher in town. It's only a kosher butcher, and that butcher distributes to all of the stores in town, including non-Jewish stores, but there's no other meat that the non-Jewish stores would have. Problem is that in the event that the kosher butcher ends up with a treifa, all he's got to do with it is to sell it to the non-kosher stores in town. So the question is, how would some Jew be allowed to buy in a non-kosher store, even though the only place to get meat for that storekeeper would have been the kosher butcher, if the kosher butcher would sell him all of his treifas and nevelas, right? So they had an arrangement in many cities where you could buy meat in any store in town, because if there had been any treifa that had been shechted, remember, we're talking about small time shechita over here. We're not talking about the modern industrial shechita, in which they're giving you 10,000 animals a week and so on, and it's distributed all over the place. Talking about a little town in which they shecht, once or twice a week, and one animal. And if the animal is a treifa, so then they would actually announce it. So they have a WhatsApp group in which, as soon as there's a treifa, they immediately post the fact that there's a treifa in town. And then everybody knows, remember, there's no refrigeration, so you don't have to worry about frozen treifa and nevela. And therefore, if it's in that kind of place, and that is called a makom shemachrizin, where everybody would be aware that there's a treifa. But then there's mikomot she'enan machrizim. Now, those are the places where they ended up demanding kosher phones. Nobody's got WhatsApp. There's no way to let people know. So they got all the treifas in town, and you'd never know about it. So there are towns in which they don't announce. Now, are we talking about in our mission about that kind of town, in which there'd be no way to know whether there had been a treifa? in town that day. So b'mayaskina, if it's a place where there is no hakarasa, so then nobody is allowed to buy from a non-kosher shop in such a town, obviously. So then the question would be, why can you only send him a whole thigh? You could send him whatever. I mean, nobody's going to be able to buy anything from him. Since it's a town in which there's no hakarasa, it's impossible to buy in a non-kosher store. So what's the problem? So obviously, okay, we got to be talking about a makom where we are machris. And that would be the reason that we have a concern that some of this meat may end up in the hands of a Jew. So what the Mishnah seems to be saying, which makes no sense, is that since it's easy to tell whether the Gid HaNashe has been removed from a thigh, nobody is going to buy this piece of meat because they're going to see that the Gid HaNashe was not removed. But then if that's the case, if it's a Makom Shemachrizin, how can we sell the whole thigh just because everyone knows by looking at it that it's complete, hasn't been cut up? The word in Yiddish that's used for this is trabering, and that is the cutting it up to gouge out the gid. Point is that even if you send the guy a whole thigh, obviously, if he's got a store, he can cut it up, wrap it in some pretty saran wrap, and put a sticker on it. And now, everybody thinks they're buying a kosher steak or something, but it is a Gid HaNashe. So how could you be allowed to send them a shleimah? You shouldn't be able to send the shleimah because then the guy himself can cut it, butcher it, and sell it as if it's not a problem of Gid HaNashe. So this Mishnah doesn't make any sense, no matter how we understand the location. Says the Gemara, well, we could actually work the Mishnah out in either direction. It could be in a Makom Shemachrizin, and it could be in a Makom She'ein Machrizin. So let's take the first case first. I say, maybe we're talking about a place where people actually are able to buy, and therefore they would go in to purchase from a goy. The thing is that what was your concern? If it's a whole thigh, then a Jew immediately sees, hey, this thing has got to get HaNashe in it, so he's not going to buy it. And if it's talking about the goy who's a butcher and he cuts it up in order to sell it in his shop, there's no way that a Jew is going to buy that because chitucha d'avik chavim meida. There's a completely different way of butchering a thigh if it's a Jewish butcher or a non-Jewish butcher. And the reason for this is because the Jewish butchers have to cut the thigh in such a way to get decent pieces out of a thigh that's been messed up to remove the Gid HaNashe. So they have to cut it lengthwise along the same way that a Gid HaNashe was running on the side, therefore, but they couldn't actually cut it across the area where the gid was, then it would look terrible. So the Goyish butchers, obviously, they want to do the butchering to get the nicest looking piece of meat, and that's the way they were trained. It's easy to tell when this was done in a non-kosher butcher or if it was done in a kosher butcher. Nobody is going to buy a piece of meat that was butchered by an Ovid Kochavim, and therefore it was not a kashat. And so you'll say, okay, so what if it's the whole thigh? But if it's the whole thigh, then you can easily see that the Gid HaNashe is there. So whether it's pieces or thigh, even if this is a Makom Shemachrizin and people are used to buying in non-kosher butcher shops, it still would be no problem. Now let's take the other direction. It could work out even in a town where nobody will buy in a non-kosher shop because they don't have an arrangement by which people can know whether there was non-kosher meat in town. And that's called the Makom She'ein Machrizin. And even so, it's not a problem. What was your problem? Your problem is, if we're talking about a Makom She'ein Machrizin, nobody can buy. So why does it say that it's only if it's a full thigh? You should even be able to send him pieces because people aren't going to buy in his store. Well, maybe over here we're worried Because if you're giving it to the goy in the presence of other Jews, so let's imagine what happens. We've got this one butcher who's the distributor in town to all of the stores, right? And now the butcher is handing it over to this goy who comes in to get his kosher meat, but he doesn't care if it's kosher or not, but it's the only meat in town. And people will see this transaction. And if that would be the case, Shama Yitnenu lo b'fnei Yisrael acher, so we are worried, therefore, that if another Jew sees that this guy came into the kosher butcher shop and bought it, he will assume that it was kosher meat. So because of that, we are worried if it wouldn't be noticeable. Therefore, we are worried that it would be assumed by the Jew that it's kosher. So that's why we're saying you can only send the Yorech Shnima, and that way he himself will see that obviously this was not properly cut out. Or maybe there's another completely out of left field explanation. Now, this is an amazing sugya, very misunderstood, quoted all the time by people who don't know what they're talking about, and we have to understand it properly. And this is called the sugya of Geneva's Das. So everybody knows, you know, you can't cheat on the test because you're going to be Geneva Das. The teacher's going to think you did it right. All of that is actually, if we're talking about butcher shops, all of that is bull. And let us talk about the reality of this issue, which is called Geneva's Das. So what the Gemara is saying is it has nothing to do with kashrus. It has to do with the fact that in the event you would send him a cut up pieces that look like they're kosher, that is called Geneva's Das, because he thinks that you are sending him pieces of meat that you would be willing to eat, and therefore you must really think a lot of him. So obviously we're not talking about where he was charged for completely kosher meat. That would be stealing. That would not just be Geneva's Das. We're talking about you either sent it as a gift or you gave him a great deal. He thinks it's a great deal because you gave him the discount, the same discount that you would have given a Jew who's buying a non-traber piece of meat. And in this case, the guy thinks he's getting either a great deal or you're giving him a beautiful gift that you would eat yourself. And that is called Geneva's Das. And Shmuel said, Asurli Gnov Da'at HaBriyot, Afil Da'ato Shel Oved Kochavim. So you cannot steal someone's Da'at. Now, question over here is, what is the Issur? If we're talking about Geneva's Das, does that mean that you're fooling someone, or does it mean that you're taking something from someone? So Rashi, most Rishonim, talk about the fact that you are taking something from him. What you're taking from him is his Das. Now, we know what Das means. Das means connection. So what this means is that he feels he owes you feelings. He feels gratitude towards you. He feels a relationship towards you. And that is taking it literally his Das. Remember what Das means. It means the way in which you connect to things. So therefore, this is how Rashi understands the whole sugya. You are stealing from him because you are stealing his feelings. And he has feelings that he thinks you deserve and you don't deserve, and you're taking that from him. That is an incredible thing. But what that means is it has nothing to do with lying. It has nothing to do with fooling your teacher into thinking that you deserve a better grade. It only has to do with exactly what it's talking about, which is literally Geneva's Das. So you're stealing his mind. And that is the way Rashi understands the entire sugya. If you're not stealing, you're not taking something from him, it would not be called Geneva. Now, there obviously is a completely different issue over here, which is, The other question about what you're doing to yourself by lying and by acting in a way that's deceptive and so on. So the truth is, there's another issue. That's something else. And the way that the Rambam brings this halacha is as a secondary element of the overall halacha in Hilchos Deos, in which a person, his lashon is also the adam lahanik atzmo b'divrei chalakot upitui. So you cannot fool people into a sale or anything like that. And lo ye'echad b'peh ve'echad b'lev. So he brings this together with the tocho kevorah halacha. Ha'inyan she'b'lev hu hadavar she'b'peh. That's how he opens the halacha. Besides that, there's the iser of gnevas da'as habriyas. So the actual explanation of gneva da'at, probably the Rambam agrees with Rashi, because he brings this gemara, brings all of the cases that our gemara brings under the rubric of gnevas da'as as opposed to divrei chalakot upitui. But the problem is that to be echad b'peh ve'echad b'lev is a problem for you in the way that you're acting, not a problem of what you're doing to the other person. So just because we're talking about gneivas das over here does not mean that you don't need to take into consideration other elements, which is the fact that you are not following HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midas. It's not the Derech Hashem to be deceptive. That's true. But the gneivas das that we're talking about over here is to actually take something from him. We're going to see that this is very fundamental to the whole sugya over here. Because
Rashi, Rebbe, v'nimsa machzik lo tov chinam, tova chinam, dafka chinam, which is fascinating. It's goodness, baseless goodness.
I just said that. I just explained the Rashi to you. So the whole issue over here might just be the Gnevas Das. You took his das and you didn't pay him for it. That's what chinam means. The Amar Shmuel, asur lignov da'at habriyot, afilu da'at toshot ovek yuchomet. Now, Shmuel never said that, actually. We're saying that in the name of Shmuel because, for all intents and purposes, Shmuel said that. And that's called michlola. We figured out what it was that Shmuel said because of something that happened in Shmuel's life. Because once it happened that Shmuel was a passenger on a ferry boat. And he says to the Talmud that he had with him, that was being Meshamish him, so he said, Lishame, Taiseu lumabure, make the ferry boat driver happy. I mean, pay him or give him a tip, whatever the circumstances were. And he did. And Shmuel was angry. Now, Shmuel was upset at him with how it is that he went about being mefayis. So why? What was the story over there? So Abaye said, the way I heard it was that the bocher that was with him had a tarnagola treifa, and he gave that tarnagola treifa to the ferryman, and he was b'marshchuta, was treating it or actually saying it. We'll see it's in Machlokas later on, which we'll get into. He gave it to him b'mar d'shchuta. So he gave it to him in exchange of a shchuta, meaning that it was looked to him, to the ferryman, that he was giving him something from his own little refrigerated backpack, and he was going to eat it himself. And not that he actually said to him that it's kosher, but some shittas hold that he told him that it was kosher. So we have both possibilities we'll get into in a moment. And because of that, must be that Shmuel was angry that it was gnevas das. Whereas Rava said, An pekah amar lelashkuye, he was told, so Shmuel had told him, give that guy a drink. So give the ferry master, a drink. And that was Anpaka, it's like a shot glass. But what he gave him was Chamra Meziga. Now, he had watered down the wine, and he pretended to be actually giving him wine. And Shmuel was angry. So apparently, in either of these cases, the basis of Shmuel's anger at his Meshamish was the fact that the Meshamesh was being gonev the das of the ferryman. But the problem is, wherever a Gemara says it was lav beferish itmar, but it was michlola itmar, that means that it's essential for you to know that you do not have a 100% proof that Shmuel said this. But that would only be necessary for me to inform you if there was another explanation for what happened. Well, what's the explanation over here? I mean, isn't it quite clear? So what's the difference? If there's no other explanation, we never tell you we didn't really hear this from Shmuel. It's not relevant. So I'll tell you, there are alternative explanations by which we cannot actually decide that Shmuel holds that it's also to do Gneivas Das even on a goy. Because Lamad Yomer Treif Avoy, maybe what he was upset about is that he was telling his Talmid, what the heck are you doing with a treif, a chicken? Meaning, you should have gotten rid of that immediately. You don't let something that's treif hang around and somebody might be nichshal with it. So maybe that's why he was angry. Amai tishei surah. Why were you leaving something that was usur in your rishus? And according to the other approach, that it was an anpaka amalei lashkriya, he told him to give him a drink. It may be that the word anpaka was used not just as the name of a shot glass, but it was a name like which we would use if we talk about giving him a shot of, right? So then it would refer to the real drink. So maybe there anpaka meant that it has to be pure wine, chayo mashma, in which case he was angry maybe at the fact that the guy didn't listen to him. Don't be a smart aleck. Do what I told you to do. I told you to give the guy a drink, and that has a definition. And you went ahead and you decided you're going to do it your way. When I tell you to do something, Shmuel was saying, you do it my way. So maybe it has nothing to do with Gneivas Das. That's possible. So, Tanya. So far, we've been learning the words of Shmuel, which is, of course, an Amora. But here we have a Braita that Rabbi Meir said, Al yisarev. You know, somebody is absolutely not going to accept your invitation. And you press him, oh, come on, please, you know, we've been so waiting to have you as our guest. You know darn well he's never going to be your guest, and that's why you're able to tell him to come, but you hope he says no, because yeah, you're 90% sure he's going to say no. And lo yarbe lo b'tikrovet, and don't like start bringing him all kinds of beautiful gifts, and you know perfectly well he never accepts any kind of gifts. V'yodea bo'sheinu mekabel, v'lo yivtach lo chaviyot. Don't open up a barrel of wine. Remember, in those days, I mean, it wasn't the size of a barrel of our barrels, but still, the wine barrels were hermetically sealed. The top of the barrel was actually made out of earthenware, and it was sealed directly to the earthenware container, which was the barrel. They didn't use wood barrels. And so what they would have to do is they would take a sword and flick right through the top, breaking it off. Once it was broken off, there was no way to reseal it. And that meant that all of the wine in that barrel basically was going to spoil unless it was rapidly consumed. In comes this guest. You have a barrel that is sealed. Well, the most expressive and flamboyant gesture that you could make to a guest who comes in is you take this expensive barrel of wine, take your sword, whammo, take the top off of it to give him a drink. And this guy figures, oh my gosh, the guy opened up a whole barrel of wine just for me, because I mean, who's going to drink all of this? Wow, he must really love me, you know? See, if that wine, in fact, had been already promised to a local store, they were going to sell it on that day, which is what they used to do. You'd bring the wine to a storekeeper, make a deal with him, he would sell it and finish it off on that day. People would come in, and instead of buying a Coke, My gosh, those cokes are used for cleaning engines. They would drink some nice, healthy wine, which, of course, was basically the only thing you could drink in those days because the water was poisonous. I mean, basically infected with, there was no way to trust the water. So that way it looks flamboyant, but in reality, as soon as this guy leaves your house, you're just going to saunter over to the grocery store and bring the owner the barrel that he was going to sell that day anyway. So lo yiftach lo chaviyot ha'mechurot l'chedvani, ela im ken hodio. You have to tell the person that you acted so flamboyantly with, you have to tell him, well, I got to tell you the truth. This was a barrel that anyway I had to open. V'lo yomar lo soch shemen mipachri kan. You can't tell him you've got this, beautiful oil container. You know perfectly well that he never uses oil on his skin. There's no oil in the pretty flask, but you offer it to him and say, here, why not try some of my wonderful oil? The guy, no, it's okay. But there was no oil in it. Now, in any of these cases, if it was done lichvodo, in order to be mechabed him, so then it would be mutter, because then the point is that anybody around who sees the way that you treat him is assuming that this is what you're doing for him. So they will say, wow, this guy must be really chosh of a guest. So if you're doing it in order to be able to provide that covet for him, that would be mutar. Now, the question is, why would that be mutar? We're going to see later on a din by the Ovel that is, seems to be a similar halacha, where it says that you're allowed to bring into the Beit HaOvel. Remember, those days, everybody that came in would bring in something to eat or to drink. And like the Sfaradim have today, the big table out in the Beit HaOvel, and the neighbors would come in and they would bring in cake and wine and so on. But we're going to see later on in a few minutes. The same halacha is true over there. If you walk into the house with a what looks like a full bottle of wine, but actually it's not, it just has a little wine in it, or that kind of thing. Over there, it also says to be mechabed him in front of the brios is mutter. Rashi says over there, the reason that it's mutter is because gadol kevod habriot. Over here, Rashi doesn't say that, and he says im bishvil kvodo shel ha'oreach. So now this does not seem to be the same thing as the kvodo of the Avel, where all these people are sitting around and this is a social situation. Here, the Bishvil kvodo is the personal chavivu alav, and Rashi doesn't justify it because of gadol kavod habriyot. So the mashmaut is that in this case, the reason that it would be mutter is because you're not stealing. That since over here, what you're expressing to people is something that is his own chashivas, so then he's happy with that. He wants that level of chavivas that you're willing to let other people know how chaviv he is, so then you're not stealing from him, because actually he got, in exchange for that, the fact that people realize that you are chaviv. That seems to be the meaning of this idea, because the Geneva, remember, is only where he didn't get anything in exchange. Over here, he got that covet in exchange. Ask the Gemara, is this really true that you can't open up the barrel unless you tell him? The Ula once came to Rav Yehuda's house. And Rav Yehuda did that flamboyant thing, and he opened up the chaviyot, but they had all been sold to the chenveni, and I mean, I'm assuming he didn't tell him. Well, maybe he did. Do you? I mean, look, well, we can't be chashish Rav Yehuda was over on the issue of Geneva's das. Or you know what? Maybe the point is that Shinei Ula, the chaviv leila Rav Yehuda. The truth is that Rav Yehuda would have done that anyway. So I'm not being goyneg das because the belava chinami patuche miftachle. So how is that not geneva's das just because you would have done it? I mean, but you didn't do it, and he's going to be mausik toiva as if you did do it. Again, the point is that the nature of Gnevas Das is that you're taking a relationship from him that doesn't exist, and in that you stole the relationship. But over here, you didn't steal, the relationship does exist. And you're just essentially expressing the relationship. So you're not taking anything from him. Again, if the point would be that it wasn't the Das that you're stealing, what difference does it make if you would have done it anyway? You didn't do it for him. So you, and he still thinks you did do it for him. Why isn't that Gnevas Das? He's being fooled. Because it's not about fooling. That's the whole point. It's about stealing, and you're not stealing. You want him to love you for good reason, because you do love him. So therefore, Shine Ula, because you would have done that anyway, and therefore you're not taking anything from him. Now, here we have that same din, but in this case, it's the Gabi of Beit HaAvel, where there's a lot of people in the room. And Tana Rabbana, this is a social moment. It is not a personal moment. So, lo yelech adam lebeit ha'avel, uviyado lagina mitkashkesh. You should not walk into the Beit HaAvel, where there's so many people around, and you've got wine that actually, if you would shake the wine bottle, it would turn out there's, hey, there doesn't seem to be very much inside that bottle, but you don't shake it, you know. So it looks like you're bringing this whole bottle of wine, but really it's half empty. And you shouldn't fill it up with water, add water to it, because then again, the guy thinks that you're bringing a whole thing of wine for him. But im yesham chaverir, if the people that are there are chosheva people, and there's a lot of people, then it's mutter, because then what you're doing is doing something where the people feel, boy, this person must be very michubad if you're bringing him that much wine. And here, it's mutter, and Rashi says the reason that it's mutter is because of the fact that Godo Korov Habriya, the Kovat Habriyas, which he didn't say before. Now, obviously, the difference is that in the earlier case, the Chavivut that you were showing, that was the point, was to be able to show that Chavivut, and that, in fact, was because of Chavivut. Over here, it's a pure, it has nothing to do with your personal relationship. The relationship in the case of the Avel is not personal. It's a social relationship in which everyone comes in and brings. And therefore, what you're doing is not indicative of the Chavivut to him. It's indicative of the Kavod for which this person will actually perhaps be Makir Teva to you. And the truth is, you didn't give him that kavod. So here it would be a Gnevas Das, except that the Chachamim were matir it, because it's so important to show kavod that even if the person himself may be misled by the kavod that you're showing him, the showing of the kavod is more important than the issue of this person's personal feelings to you about the fact that you showed him the kavod. You see, so it seems to be the same on the surface, but in reality is a completely different situation. Tana Rabbana, lo yimkor adam l'chaviro sadal shel meita b'chlal shel shayar shvuta. So you sell a person a leather sandal, and it's made from the leather of a skin where an animal had died. Now, if it died, we don't know what caused it to die. I mean, maybe it died because it had been bitten by a poisonous snake, and maybe there was something that would have penetrated into the skin that itself might be dangerous of, over a long period of time, that might be absorbed through the foot. So don't sell that to him for two reasons. First of all, it's a sakana, because you don't know where the animal died. And besides that, you've got mipnesha mateo. Now, obviously, it can't be talking about that you charged him the price of the regular leather, because then that would be stealing money. That would not just be stealing his das. It means that you're giving him the correct price. He thinks you're giving him a great deal because you like him. But the truth is that this was garbage, that if people knew that it was from an animal that had dropped dead suddenly, they wouldn't have bought it. So therefore, it would be also included under being mate. Furthermore, lo yishager adam l'chaveru chavichol yain v'shemen tzaf al piya. Now, these are things that we're mentioning here that are not necessarily gneivas das, but they are usur because they come under the same heading, but for different reasons. So like the case over here, there's a more important issue of whether the guy's going to be poisoned to death, you know, wearing these things for the next 5 years. And in the next case, we also have issues that go far beyond the question of whether you're fooling him, because we're not fooling him initially. You send him a barrel of wine and there's some oil that's floating on top. And the guy thinks that, oh, wow, this is a whole barrel of oil. Now, obviously, he's going to find out the first time he dips something into it that it's not a full barrel of oil. So it can't be because of Gneivas Das. So therefore, what would be the reason? The reason is because there was such a maaseh. Maaseh be'echad, shishiger l'chaviro chavichol yayin v'shem etzaf al piya. And the guy assumed that it was really a full barrel of oil, which of course was a major component of the diet. So this is this beautiful, delicious, fresh olive oil. The guy figures, wow, he's going to be able to make a party with a giant salad. He invites all the neighbors. He's always wanted to make a party. And what happened over here was he went, invited all the neighbors, assuming that it was oil. They all come in. And now he's ready to bring out the oil, and he finds out he doesn't have any oil. He's got wine, and he's got 50 guests out there that are all singing about the great feast that doesn't appear, and he goes and commits suicide. He was so embarrassed. So, v'chanaketatzmo. And other things like this. So again, obviously, it doesn't mean we're worried that somebody's going to get, you know, commit suicide. But the point is, don't put someone into a position in which you are going to humiliate him. There's a chance, maybe you'll humiliate him. If somebody invites you to a meal and his kids start, you know, driving you nuts, they want what's in your plate. So, okay, so if you got a one-year-old, that happens very often. Says, hey, here, take it, little boy, you know. And you'd have to ask permission from the Bala Bayit. And there was once a Maisim of, it was a time of Shnei Bat Soret. It was very tough famine times. And a guy invited three guests. And all he had was basically three eggs to put in front of them. So, doesn't mean literally eggs, could be like eggs. Depends on whether what the gear says, kir shalosh beitzim or shalosh beitzim, two different gears. And baba nosha bala bayit. So the kid comes along and he wants one of these eggs. That's it, it's more fun if we learn it's actual eggs. So the guy gives him the egg. The next guest, he wants the other egg. Next guest gives him his egg. And the third one gives him the egg. And the father walks in and he sees his. You, he sees one egg is in the kid's mouth and the other two eggs he's squishing in his hands. Oh, no. So he smacks the kid down. The kid falls to the ground and ends up busting his head, gets a brain concussion, dies. The mother sees that the child died. She goes up and commits suicide. The father sees that he just killed his wife and his child. He goes and commits suicide. And as Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, Al davar zeh nehargu shalosh nefashot b'Yisrael, because of the lack of thinking of the implications of your action, a guy invites you to his house and ends up destroying his life. So again, think about the consequences and think about what is really yours. Anyway, why does it say us this? I mean, obviously, what do you mean, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, Al dover zanergo? You just said, Al dover zanergo. Maika mashmama. No, we wanted to bring out who said this over. It's not Stam Abobamais. It was Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov that had said this brighter from the beginning. Tana Rabban. Okay, so now let's talk about the question of the Yorech. And the issues that we raised earlier, before we got to the explanation out of left field, which was that the discussion about the outcome over here had to do with Gneva Da'at and did not have to do with anything that had to do with kashrus. So let's take a look at this braita, where we're talking about elements of kashrut. Tan Rabbanu. Here we're talking about sending something to a Jew. So, ha-sholeach yarech l'chaveiro, so you want to send a complete yarech. So if it's shlema, you do not have to take out the gid ha-nasha, because the person that receives it sees very nice of you to send this, whether it was paid for, whatever, but he realizes that it was not tragered. Nobody took out the gid ha-nasha. You can see right away. And therefore, but if you're sending him pieces, so the person might think that, oh, okay, I mean, I know you keep kosher, you're probably sending me kosher meat. So then he won't realize that the Gid HaNasha wasn't removed. And but what about if it wasn't a friend, it was an Ovid Kerchavim? So if it's an Ovik or Chafim, it doesn't matter whether it was Hatucha or whether it was Shlema. Enot Tzarich L'Tol Amin U'Gid HaNasher, apparently because nobody's going to buy it from the Ovik or Chafim anyway, which of course leads into the question that we had earlier about, are we talking about a place where they have a WhatsApp group or not? So this is Mokum She'Machrizin or Mokum She'Eino Machrizin. Now, there's two reasons. There's two reasons that in general the Chachamim say don't sell meat that is nevela or treifa to a goy. So one thing is that the goy is going to assume that you actually are selling him meat that you would be eating yourself. And that we said before, that was the problem of Gneivas Das. Okay. Or it may be if you're selling it for the same price, it's literally Gneva. The Echad Shemiyachzor v'yim kirena liYisrael acher. Now this is interesting because that leads us, of course, to wonder how could he sell it to another Jew if we said before that it doesn't matter because nobody's going to buy it from him. So something's fishy with this Braita. Now the Braita continues. V'lo yomar adam l'oved kol chavim. You shouldn't say to a goy, here is a buck, go into the butcher's store and buy me some meat. Well, there's two reasons why it would be stupid to do that. First of all, if you give this guy a buck to buy kosher meat, he'll walk into the butcher shop and he'll say, so-and-so wants a piece of meat. The butcher gives him the meat and then he walks out without paying. So that's anasim. So how do you know that he's not going to just, the guy's going to be scared to say anything? So eventually you're giving a weapon, so to speak, into the hands of a guy to steal from your friendly neighborhood butcher. And not only that, since he's a guy, then maybe the butcher is going to think, if he didn't say, I mean, why would you be able to rely that if the guy's going to tell him it's for a Jew? He'll think that he is buying for himself, and therefore he'll give him the velos or treifas that happened that day. But of course, that would mean that there would be a velos or treifas available. But what if we didn't hear that there were a velos or treifas available, and it's a bakar shemach reason? So we're going to have to go through the different cases here because they don't add up to be referring to the same situation. Because, like, we're going back and forth here. Let's start at the beginning. You said that in a case where you're sending it to a Jew, so, okay, he's going to see that if it's a whole thigh, he's going to see that it was not removed. But if you're selling it to an Ovik Yechavim, it's no problem. You can send it even if it's cut up pieces. So why is that? Obviously, because nobody's going to buy it. Okay, so what type of situation is that referring to? But my askinan, what location is this? Is this a location where they have a WhatsApp group? So then I don't understand. If you have a WhatsApp group, then you are allowed to buy in that city. You're allowed to buy from a non-kosher butcher because if there would be any non-kosher food available, everyone would know from their non-kosher phone. And therefore, anyway, what difference would it make if they use a non-kosher phone? Sell them the veils for treifas, they deserve it. So, no, that's not really the reason. So why in the world, if there is a WhatsApp group, why don't you need to be litalimeno gedanasha if it was cut up, if there was no notice, given to lo achrus? So what's going to prevent a Jew from coming into the local supermarket and buy meat? So a Jew would come in and buy it, and he will actually, of course, since he didn't get a notice, he's going to assume that he can go ahead and buy it. So elapshita, obviously we've got to be talking about a place where no Jew would ever buy in a non-kosher market because they do not have a WhatsApp group. So it must be a makom she'ein machrizim. Okay, so put that to the side now. The Reish is talking about a non-machrizim. Now let's take a look at the next case. The next case is that there's two reasons why not to sell nevelot v'treifot to an oved kofar. So one is because the guy's assuming that you're selling a meat that you would eat. And the other is, we're worried that maybe he's going to take it and he's going to sell it to a Jew. But I thought you just said that we're talking about a place where no Jew is going to buy. It must be a makom she'ein machrizim, which was the reason that it's okay to sell it to the goy, even if it's pieces of meat. So then I don't understand, why are we worried that he's going to sell it to Yisrael where nobody's going to buy from him, since it's a place in Machrizim and nobody buys in a non-kosher butcher? So what's the difference what you send him? So that all of a sudden now, we've got to be talking about a place where they are machriz, and people actually will be buying meat from a non-kosher butcher. And therefore, if we're talking about a makom shemachrizin, and people are actually able to, that makes sense. So you said one of the reasons you can't sell it to because he'll turn around and he'll sell it in his store to a Jew, right? Now, okay, so now all of a sudden we've switched. Now let's go to the next case. Don't say to a guy, here's a buck, go into the store and get me meat. And there's two reasons. One reason is because he might actually walk out without paying. And the second reason is because if the store owner sees that he's a guy, they may sell him nevelot v'treifot. But how could they sell him nevelot v'treifot if it didn't show up on your WhatsApp group? And then it should just say, if there were nevelot v'treifot in town that day, don't do it. But otherwise, what's the problem? If you're claiming that we're talking about a makom shemachrizin, which is what you just said, so then if there would have been any treifas and avelas, it would have shown up on your phone. So and since they weren't machris, it would be no chashash. So it must be that this is a place that doesn't have WhatsApp groups. We're running around over here. Each case is different. The Reisha and the Seifa are talking about towns without WhatsApp, and therefore it's a mokum she'ein machrizin, and therefore there is a real chashash that there is going to be actually non-treifa meat. So over there, you can send him, if it's a mokum she'ein machrizim, it doesn't matter what you send to the guy. That's why you're allowed to send it to the guy. And the last one is talking about, we're worried, since it's a mokum she'ein machrizim, we're worried that if he looks like a guy, the butcher will assume he's buying it for himself and give him nevelos v'treifos, even though it didn't show up on your WhatsApp, because we're talking about towns that don't have WhatsApp groups. But then the middle one only worked out to be in a place where they are machrizim. So there it was saying you shouldn't sell to a goy if it's not kosher, because over there he'll go around and sell it. If he's going to be able to go around and selling it, so then it has to be a mokum where they are machrizin and people do buy in non-kosher butcher shops. I mean, how do you make a brayta, which every case is switching the situation, and you're unable to get a sense of where exactly the halacha is? Well, what can you do? Says Abaye, I guess it's one of those cases where the author of the Brayta left it up to the intelligent reader to work it out for himself, you know? I mean, it's not going to work out any other way. So Reisha B'Sefer was talking about a Mokum She'in Machrizim. Yes, and the middle case, obviously, has got to be talking about a Mokum where they are Machrizim. Rava says, no, that doesn't make sense. Makes more sense to talk about a case in which they do have the whole thing. They do have WhatsApp groups. And the question is whether the WhatsApp group was properly utilized. The Reisha and the Seifa are talking about where there was a notice on the WhatsApp group that said that there were things that were nevelous for Treifas that fell in today. So nobody's going to go buying, right? If nobody's going to go buying, so then it, obviously you would be allowed to send whatever you want to the goy because nobody's going to be walking in to buy. So that explains the ratio. The Seifa is exactly the same thing. There was a notice, and if there was a notice, so then it means that there was actually Treifa and Avela that was around. But the middle case was talking about there was an actual WhatsApp, but somebody messed up that day and did not put the notice on the group. So there, what it's saying is, you cannot sell it to him because maybe he will sell it. So we're saying, Mishnei Dvarim, well, one of them is he's going to sell it to a Jew. How could he sell it to a Jew? Because there was no announcement made on the WhatsApp. And in general, people rely on that and they messed up today. And therefore, it's talking about on a day like today where it was not actually announced, be careful not to sell Nevelos and Treifus because people will end up buying from him. So the Mitziata case was Shalo Hichrizu. It was the same basic case. They had a WhatsApp group. But to start saying that it depends, that different cases are talking about different, that Rava says is ridiculous. There was a WhatsApp group in all of the situations, but it's possible that someone messed up. And that's more reasonable. And Rav Ashi says you could go to the other direction. The whole Brayta was talking about places where they're not machriz, and therefore, if they're not machriz, you can never buy from them. So everything works out. The first case was talking about sending cut-up meat, which is fine, because nobody's ever going to buy from him, because it's a mokum she'ein machrizin. So it's basically not open to Jews, and there's no problem of that case whatsoever. And because of that, the only problem that we have to worry about is why does it say in the middle case, don't send the velos for treifas to a goy? That's because gzeira shema yimkirena bifnei Yisrael. What we're worried about is that in the event that he sold it to him publicly, then the person who sees the guy going into the butcher shop and going out and going into his own 7-Eleven or his little supermarket, he will assume, oh, I saw him myself buying directly from the kosher butcher, so maybe he would go and buy it from him. Even though generally you don't buy at a kosher, non-kosher butcher because it's a mokum she'ein machrizin, but in this case, as Rashi explains, it's talking about that he sells it to him in the butcher shop. Not talking about stop selling. We're not concerned in general that somebody's going to see the transaction. Why would they assume that it's kosher? But over here, the butcher shop is selling kosher meat. The guy walks in. They don't announce. So you never heard that there was non-kosher meat. Goy walks in. He buys. Obviously, the Jewish butcher is going to sell the goy the nevelos for treifas, but people don't know that because it's a mokum she'ein machrizin. So they'll say, well, I would never buy meat at a non-kosher store, but I saw this guy 5 minutes ago in the super duper Mahadran Minim Mahadran kosher butcher, and he just took it out of the freezer, you know, so I figure he'll give me a better deal. These kosher butchers, they always charge another 20% just because of the kosher sign. So I'll go next door and I'll get it for cheap. assuming that it was the same meat that he was sold for you. That's the problem. So if he sells it in public, so over there, there's a very good chance that somebody's going to make that mistake. If Stam, the cases that we said before, we never mentioned this idea, that's because we're not going to be choshish that in a private transaction, somebody's going to assume that he can go and buy it from you. Why would he assume that? That's how Rashi understands the differences. So if it was something that's done out of the house, we're not chayish for this, which is why we went through all of the trouble to figure out mokum shemachrisin or not. And this is talking about where it was sold publicly. Now, when we do make this announcement, what exactly do we put up on the sign which is letting people know? We say what? There's trade for meat in town? No. What we do, says Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, is we put up a big sign that says, Nofal Bisra Livnei Chela. There's lots of meat available to all the soldier boys in town, which every Jew understands is not referring to Mikey. It's referring to the Goyim that are in town. And they used to be the ones that would hang around with the soldiers and making the population in general terrified. So when you put up a sign, and it says there's meat available for all the soldier boys, which every Jew understands means that there's tray for meat in town, or in the veil of something happened to the Shita. Well, why do that? I mean, why rely on people's realizing that? Why don't you just openly say, not for tray fata livnei chayla? Oh, come on, man, because they're not going to buy it then. I mean, it's an embarrassment. You know, we'll buy the Jew meat that no Jew would ever touch. Get out of here. So therefore, you say, now we got special meat for the soldier boys. All right. I mean, of course, they know deep down that that's what's going on, but they're not going to embarrass themselves. But aren't you actually being gonev das? I mean, by writing that, they think that it's kosher meat. Well, they think it's kosher meat. You know, that's their own assumptions, you know. Inu dekamatiu dan nafshayo. We do not have to go out of our way to tell the guy that it's not kosher. We didn't say it's kosher. So now this is the question. All the other cases that we had before, did we actually make a real deception? Or was it the fact that the guy made the assumption? Let's say the case where somebody does his flamboyant opening of that barrel of wine. So are we talking about where he told the Oreach, he says to him, look how much I love you, man. And he goes ahead and he opens up the whole thing. Is that what it's talking about? And if you didn't tell him beferish, so then it would be a case of inu dekamatu nafshayu or not? I mean, Rashi says, I don't know, it certainly appears from him, from here, that inochinami. The cases of Mateu, like we said before about the goy, and we mentioned that Rashi has two explanations of the word bimar shvuta. So does bimar mean that he actually represents it as shvuta, which is in exchange of, and he had said something and it wasn't that thing? Or does it just mean that it could be taken for shvuta? So Rashi says, seems from here that it's only gnevas das if you actually are gnev daito, you have to tell him. But Tosa says that's crazy because the Braita also says, don't open it up unless you tell him that it was sold. So that means you'd have to actually tell him the opposite, not that you're telling him the fact that you're doing it for him. So how could it be Rashi's shot? That's clear that if you just opened it and you didn't tell him I'm opening for you, that it is Geneva's das. So therefore, Tosa says, look, it's all dependent on the situation. I mean, how often does somebody have a barrel that he just managed that morning to make a deal with the local makola that are going to be selling it? I mean, nobody's going to even think of that. Masha Inkane, you're talking about the case over here of the goyim, and all of a sudden there's a sign up in town. I mean, obviously you got to be stupid not to try to figure out why all of a sudden there's Boshel of Nechela. So there, you are fooling yourself. Look, I'll show you a case where you see clearly that the Gemara holds that when a person fools himself, is not your responsibility to make sure that he doesn't fool himself. That's not called stealing. Geneva's Das is where you did something where there would be any reason. Wait, this is when there would be every reason to, and of course, Rashi on some level has to agree with this. So this sugya doesn't work out. There would be every reason for him to make assumptions. So let's take a look at a situation like this. Marzutra, the Raider of Nachman, was going from the town of Sichra to the town of Beit Mechuzah. Now, Rava and Rav Safra, they were actually heading towards Sichra. So they were heading in opposite directions, and they meet on the road. Now, Marzutra assumed that they had heard that he was coming to town and that he was on his way to Beit Mechuzah, and that they had walked out from Mechuzah to meet him as he was coming from Sichra. But they were just stopped going to Sichra. They meet on the road. He makes the assumption that they had come to greet him. And he says to them, oh, why did you go to so much trouble to walk all the way here just to greet me? You shouldn't have done it. So my God, Rav Safra says, well, we got to tell the honest truth. We weren't coming to greet you, which is terribly embarrassing. I mean, somebody, you know, thanks you for coming. Say, no, actually, I wasn't coming to, we were going this way anyway. You know, you feel like a total idiot. So what Rav Safra says to him is, no, the truth is, I have to tell you the truth, we didn't know you were coming. I mean, if we would have known you were coming, we would have gone another 20 miles, you know, but we didn't know. So afterwards, Rav says to Rav Safra, why'd you have to tell him that? I mean, that was, again, we're talking about Gneva's Das. The same thing is true of Chalisha's Das. Achlishte Ladaite, that sick feeling that a person has inside where he makes a fool of himself, you know, where somebody says, I want it to fall through the floor. Why did he want to fall through the floor? Because he lost all sense of self in placement of the world. That's called chalishus. You weaken his connection to things. So you've made his das now weak. Why did you do that? So Rav Safra said, well, I had no choice. I mean, wasn't I going to be over on Geneva's das if I let him think that we came all the way out to meet him? Omar leva komatin anle. I mean, isn't that Geneva? And Rav said to him, no. We were just walking along. He's the one that was fooling himself. We didn't do anything to fool him. Iuho de komate nafshe. So you see from here that you do not have a chiv to make sure that the person is not maxik v'chatoi v'chinam if that's his own mistake. It's not like it's a hashavas aveda, and therefore the din of Geneva's das does not extend to even restoring his das if you had it in a way that was illicit, and you didn't have a right to take it.